All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio. Today is our benefits program, and we've got experts everywhere to answer your questions. So if you do have one for us, give us a call here at 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. We are going to be talking with the head of the Ann Arbor VA. We are going to be talking with representatives from Legal Help for Veterans, from the Washtenaw County Veteran Service Office, and just anything that you can think of, let us know what your question might be. Before we get into our interview with the head of the Ann Arbor VA, I want to make sure that we thank our faithful sponsors, and that includes, of course, Legal Help for Veterans, the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the Eisenhower Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, VetBiz Central out of Flint, Michigan, specializing in helping veterans get their businesses going, and VFW Post 423, the American Legion Post number 46, and the Vietnam Veterans Post 310, the Charles S. Kettles Post here in Ann Arbor. Thank you all for your support. And our newest advertiser on Veterans Radio is the Ann Arbor VA. So we want to thank all of them for their sponsorship. We couldn't do it without them, and we're very grateful for their support. If you'd like to support us, you could always go to veteransradio.net and click on the Buddy Money logo and help us out. It costs us just a little bit of money to keep the program going. But since we've turned ourselves into a nonprofit, which is Veterans Radio America, is a 501c3, any donations that we receive now may be tax deductible. Please check with your financial advisor on that one. So we're going to get right into the program right now. And my opening guest is the head of the Ann Arbor Veterans Affairs Hospital System, and that is Dr. Ginny Kreisman. And Dr. Kreisman, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, thank you, Dell. I really appreciate this opportunity to come on and talk a little bit about what we're doing here at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System. And I just want to reach out right now and let you know that you actually referenced earlier, we are now named the Kettles, the Lieutenant Colonel Kettles VA Medical Center.
Yay.
So this hospital system has been named after Lieutenant Colonel Kettles, and we're very excited about that opportunity. It's the first time in our healthcare system that we've been named after somebody with such laudable opportunities they brought forward from him. So, you know, we're just looking forward to that, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you very much. Colonel Kettles is one of our favorite guests and one of my favorite people I've ever known in my life. And, you know, he's a role model for so many of us in the local veterans community. So kudos to everybody that made this all possible. And thanks. I can't wait to see the sign when I go up there in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it. And we're also looking to look at our Canton VA and see if we can name that after somebody, too, from that area that could actually just represent, you know, what we serve and who we create our services for to meet their needs. So we're literally looking forward to that opportunity.
Right. Well, we asked you to come on the program to tell us what's going on at the Ann Arbor VA and at VAs all across the country, but more specifically is for our local one. So what is going on? Probably especially the thing on most people's minds are the vaccines.
Yes. So let me just start out that as of this Saturday, we've actually vaccinated over 11,000 individuals. 2,000 of them have been our own healthcare employees. That's just an opportunity to make a safer place for people to come and practice, but also for our veterans to come in, but almost 9,000 veterans. And my goal is by the end of the, probably next week or so, if I had my way, is to have 1,500 veterans on a daily basis receiving vaccinations from us. 750 new and 750 second. Because in my world, it is only safe for everybody to, and our ability to provide care and to move forward if folks are vaccinated. So I need to have my employees vaccinated. I need to have my veterans vaccinated. So I'm really working. I have pushed my team probably to their limits, but they are up to the charge and they are moving forward. And we are working. We had actually almost 900 vaccinations on Friday. Wow. And we're just really looking to meet the needs of our veterans and our employees to create a safe environment, because all of us want to get to some type of new normal that's agreeable and safe. And so we are really pushing forward with that product. We have Pfizer product at the healthcare system here, and we've been able to redistribute it out to Flint and Jackson. We have Moderna product out of Toledo. But since there's such a limited supply of Moderna product, we've been actually supplementing them with Pfizer product. So we're just charging forward. We appreciate all of our veterans that are willing to come in. Anybody at 65 and older, and actually we're moving down to 55 and older in some of our areas, they're willing to come in. We're willing to vaccinate them. We're going to ask you for a first and second appointment, because it's very important. Not just to have the one appointment, but to have both appointments. Because both appointments and both vaccinations are going to make a difference in how we move forward. So I'm going to tell you, I have 11,000 veterans to this date, or veterans and employees, that have stepped up to the charge and they're willing to go forward.
Okay, and for those of you who live in the Ann Arbor area, I do have a phone number that you can call if you haven't been contacted yet. And that is, where did it go? There it is, 734-222-7100, 734-222-7100. Dr. Christman, I wanted to ask you about who qualifies to get these shots at the VA?
Yeah, so currently you have to be enrolled in our healthcare system, but we're actually looking towards a fourth mission. I know you know what a fourth mission means to us, but a fourth mission means we're going broader than what our abilities are right now. Similar to when in spring we actually went out and helped our community partners and took in patients from the community, we're actually looking to try to approach our what we call category G and E, 8 G and E veterans. Those are folks that currently, you know, they are veterans, but they don't really qualify for this type of health care. But we're working with our central office to see if we can bring this forward as a fourth mission so that we can reach those 22,000 veterans that are out there that don't qualify for VA care, but might benefit from this, because quite frankly, this does me no good for my veterans or myself or my employees if I can only vaccinate myself. I need to be able to reach our community so that we're all saved, so that there are teachers that out there that might frankly not meet the, say, financial expectations of the VA or not service connected. They would have this opportunity to be vaccinated just like everybody else based on CDC guidelines. But, you know, those essential employees, police officers, EMT employees. My first COVID patient was an EMT. So this hits home. So we're really looking to see if we can spread our abilities with our resources to meet veterans wherever they might be. But currently you must be enrolled in our healthcare system. So if you're not, I've actually deployed eligibility clerks to support our process there, because if that's what you need to be, then we're willing to make it happen.
Do you? I'm thinking of those income limitations that you mentioned earlier. So it doesn't make any difference if you're a, you know, HG or E or whatever they are. You can still register for healthcare through the VA correctly, can't you?
Yes, you can still register for our care, and you should do that. Because like I said, even if you're in a category 8 G or E, I'm working to try to create a fourth mission that allows me to support you, even if it's just for the vaccine. Just in my, you know, what's my benefit? I get you to come in and see what I have to provide, and maybe you want to stay.
Well, I'm one of the ones that fell into that. I hadn't used the VA in 30 years or so. I went up there for something, and the next thing I know, I moved all my care there, and it's wonderful care. I feel safe. They have an understanding that many, I don't like to use it, they're in civilian medical personnel don't have, but I found that to be very helpful. And the other thing was, is, as we're talking about the vaccines, is that I got a call. I had the shot. Next Monday, I'll get the second shot. And as we talked about earlier before we went on the air, we're all looking forward to being able to get out and have go to dinner or go to the beach or go anywhere. And in order to do that, with the more of us that are vaccinated, the better off it's going to be for everybody. So I would encourage everybody who's out there, at least in the Ann Arbor area and probably at all the other VAs around the country, is to contact your VA and see if you are eligible to be vaccinated and sign up for the program. And you're going to be ahead of a lot of civilian organizations out there. Unfortunately, seems to be a lot of turmoil in trying to get these shots.
I agree, sir. As somebody, you know, I've lost family members to COVID. So in my mind, any way I can help not anybody to go through the experiences that I had is a positive. And so I'm just really looking for every opportunity for me to get out there and for my team to get out there and for the healthcare system to get out there and meet the needs of our veterans and family givers. I will just also point out, too, if you're part of their caregiver support program, which we have a lot of folks, veterans that need that caregiver support program, that we will also vaccinate your primary caregiver.
Okay, so if somebody is disabled at home and their spouse or whoever their caregiver is would be eligible as well?
Yes, because we feel this is, again, just an opportunity not just for the veteran, but for their family members, so it's a cohesive group that's safe.
Okay. What else is going on at the Ann Arbor VA? You were talking about the women's clinic, which I think is really an important thing.
Sure. You know, so one of the struggles with our healthcare system right now is it's pretty expansive. And, you know, it's funny, even when I go to new employee orientation, I say, who got lost today? At least three people raise their hand because it's so expansive and it's so big. But I will tell you right now, we've had a lot of construction going. We recently put in the Fisher House, which is allowing us to serve veterans that are and their family and caregivers coming in. So that's lovely. But, you know, the other thing, too, is we're actually have some new construction. It's going to improve the phlebotomy station where people get their labs, make it more extensive, more effective to meet the veterans. But in addition, we're putting in a women's healthcare clinic. About 10% of my veterans, which is over 70,000, are women. And we need to create a space for them to get their care, a safe space, a space that recognizes their needs. And so in the process, we have been working on that. So probably in October, we not only will be opening a new phlebotomy station that will be much nicer and meet the needs of all of our veterans, a women's health clinic, which will meet the needs of those folks, but also the Canton VA will be opening up the community-based outpatient clinic. Will be opening up out there off of it's Lots Road out in Canton, and it will meet the needs of our veterans closer to home. And this is in addition to our virtual care that we're providing. But I will tell you right now, due to the vaccination and just our clinics, we're doing about 2,500 appointments a day throughout the healthcare system, really trying to meet all the needs of our veterans, be it virtual, procedure, surgery, inpatient care, outpatient care, just to make sure that we're out there and supporting them as we go through this next year of what knows what's going to happen.
Well, that's true. We certainly don't know what's going to happen next. Also, joining us here in this part of the program is Brian Hayes, who is the public relations person at the Ann Arbor, the Charles S. Kettles Veterans Administration Hospital in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about some of the protocols and procedures that people have to go through to get into the hospital today?
Well, you can just, become an eligible patient and then you can transfer your health care over just like you did, Dale. I would recommend it. You know, like I've said many times, as an employee of the healthcare system, I'm also a user of the healthcare system as a veteran myself of the Navy. So, and it's actually, you can just go right online, va.gov, the bottom of the page, there's a big button you can click to become eligible for healthcare, to get your paperwork in, do your 1010 EZ. That's the form you fill out to get healthcare. It goes to a team. It's routed to a team right in the hospital. And they vet that. And the next thing you know, you'll get a phone call to get an appointment set. It really is just about that easy.
And all of the medical programs, I guess, and procedures and things, are those still going on at the hospital?
Yeah, we're doing, I think, just about as many face-to-face appointments as we always have for those that are needed, where we can convert something to virtual for safety reasons, or really sometimes just for the convenience of the patient. Sometimes it's a long drive, and we can convert that appointment to virtual. So we're trying to do the best we can with that. We've grown in the thousands of percentages in that number as far as our virtual care. But of course, we're still seeing our patients on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, one of the messages we like to get out is, look, if you need care, get it. Come get it. Don't postpone your care because you think COVID is getting in the way. If you need an appointment to see a doc, we'll get you in.
Okay, just make sure you wear a mask, maintain your distance, and wash your hands. And they
the three W's, right? Wear a mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance.
All right. And they're going to take your temperature when you walk in anyhow, so don't be worried about that. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Talking with Brian Hayes from the Charles Kettles VA Hospital here in Ann Arbor, and our special guest has been the director of the local VA, and that's Dr. Ginny Kreisman. Dr. Kreisman, is there anything else that you would like to add before we go to break?
Only that, you know, we're just here. We're looking forward to providing services to our veterans. We're looking for different ways to do it. I'm just going to say, for example, I just signed an executive decision memorandum so that we can support food inequities, right? So a lot of our veterans and other folks in our community are having limited resources. So we are actually going to partner with food gatherers to provide for food services for our veteran population. So we're not just a healthcare system. We're a community, and we're looking to provide health care, whether you be homeless, whether you need suicide prevention care, whether you need home food, you have food insecurities. We're here to support you from all those different ranges. So looking forward to continuing. That's why I'm here, because I just love our mission.
Well, thank you very much for being on our program today. You are more than welcome, as I said, to stay around. And after the break, we're going to start going after some of the questions that we have received and talk about a few things. So in the meantime, thank you both very much. You're listening to Veterans Radio. If you have a question, now's your opportunity, 734-822-1600. Give us a call. We'll take your question, answer it right here on the air. And we'll be right back after this. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Right. We are back here on Veterans Radio, and to answer the question is, what's going on? So we want to find out what is going on. And joining me now on the air are our regular panel members for our benefits program, starting off with retired Brigadier General Carol Ann Falzone, United States Air Force, and she's also affiliated with Legal Help for Veterans. So, General, welcome back.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. What a great way to open with Dr. Kreisman and Brian from the Kettles VA Medical Center. What a great announcement, and Happy New Year.
That's a great way to begin the year, that's for sure. Also with us is Michael Smith, and Michael is the Executive Director of the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office and is our expert benefits person, knows everything in the whole wide world, I think. Michael, welcome back.
It's good to be back on the air, and a new year and a new perspective, and looks like a lot of good things going on in the veterans community.
Well, I'm anxious to talk about those. And we also have Brian Hayes, who's still on the line with the Kettles. It's going to take me a while to get that down with the Kettles VA health program going on out there. Brian, welcome back. And gee, is that you on the ad?
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah. Boy, I thought I recognized that voice.
Well, I before I came to the VA in this position, I had a 25-year career in broadcast, so it just seemed like a regular segue. So.
Why not? No. Well, it's cool. It's good. Thank you very much also for the support of the VA here in Ann Arbor. We're really grateful for that. So I guess we'll start off with, I don't know if you want to talk about a particular question. I guess, Michael, is there anything that we need to be aware of that is new in the disability brand? Reminding our audience that the VA is kind of broken into two branches. There's a healthcare branch, a healthcare branch and the benefits side of the story. So I'm going to ask Michael about the benefit side. Anything new and exciting?
Well, with the signing of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2020, the government finally recognized three new presumptive conditions related to herbicide exposure. I believe it's Parkinson's-like symptoms, bladder cancer, and hypothyroidism. Now, what we know about that currently is, as you know, whenever there's a new law signed a new bill signed into law, we still have to go through the Administrative Procedures Act and follow those processes for the VA to, or any federal government agency, to promulgate their rules in the Federal Register. And there's always proposed rules. There's the opportunity for stakeholders to ask questions or request clarification of those rules. The agency, in this case, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, is going to be required to respond to any inquiries for those proposed rules. And then eventually they will be promulgated and be used to process claims. A lot of people are, once a law is signed, they think that the immediate thing to do is go out and file claims. Now, that is a strategy. People can go out and file claims under this premise that they're going to get an earlier effective date. But the reality here is, if there is no liberalization of that law, then the effective date is going to be the date of the rules. So if you file a claim in January, but the rules go into effect in May, your effective date may not go all the way back to January. So and then it does kind of bog down the VA's Veterans Benefits Administration with claims that they are just literally at this time cannot process. So I understand the strategy, and there's a lot of people that would advise people to go out and file their claims for service connection, for disability compensation, for these three new presumptive conditions, or for surviving spouses to go out and file claims for dependency indemnity compensation, for losing loved ones to any of these new conditions. But just remember that the Veterans Benefits Administration is not in a position to be able to process those claims at this point. They still have to wait for the rulemaking process. And we should respect that and respect our VA employees and the tremendous work that they do to support veterans and survivors and dependents with the current rules that have in place to be able to process claims for benefits.
All right. Well, yeah. When you're working with a bureaucracy, it's something that is, comes expected. You throw in a pandemic along with it, and it's going to throw things into a little bit of a delay. Carol Ann, I want to, again, welcome you back to the program, but wanted to know if there's anything that you are aware of that has changed through Legal Help for Veterans.
Well, no, just the fact that what Michael just brought up, and I haven't had a chance to go through the entire document, but it's going to be really interesting to see the continued questions we get about 100% compensation for service connected. And as you well know, a couple years ago, they granted 50% and above, you could get your military pay and your disability. But we've been waiting for that to be ruled on since last January. So hopefully maybe that's being addressed in the document going forward. But as Michael said, the claims are still coming in. if you do have an issue, I think it's really interesting that a lot of our clients have kept some of these issues open, even though they've been getting denials and denials. It's going to be interesting with these three presumptives being granted moving forward.
Would this be, I'll ask the question, let's suppose that I had Parkinson's-like symptoms and had been rejected earlier on, you know, maybe 5 years ago or something like that. So would I refile or would I appeal what had occurred 5 years ago?
It's Michael can answer this probably. He does it every single day. But I want to tell you, if you've kept the claim open, so every time you get a denial, you know, whether through the VSO, a county counselor, you've reapplied, and it might be a BVA still out there, you don't have to reopen it. It's already open. But then there is the issue, if a year went by after your denial, then the case was closed, you're probably going to have to reopen.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, yes, that's correct. What one of the and let's make that real clear. So if the VA issues a denial or they issue a decision, whether it's an award or it's a denial, after 1 year, that case is considered closed if you do not do any additional actions on the claim, such as filing an appeal.
Okay.
If you file an appeal, then there's been no decision on the appeal, or you're still in the processes of going, you know, playing the back and forth game with the VA during an appellate period, then yes, the claim is still considered open. But one thing we have to think about with herbicide related conditions is if you, in your example, were denied for Parkinson's like or symptoms or hypothyroidism or bladder cancer 5 years ago, and after a year, you did nothing to keep that claim open, it is closed. Yes, you do have to reopen the claim. But what we have to now consider, and what the VA always has to consider whenever there's an amendment to the Agent Orange Act, is the Niemer court decision out of the Northern District of California that held on the VA that they have to consider an earlier effective date for people who brought to the VA's attention a specific claim for benefits that was based on herbicide exposure, or for a survivor that brought a claim to the VA based on herbicide exposure. If that was denied based on that condition was not on the list of presumptive conditions at the time, and then it's later added, under the Niemer court decision, the VA is required to go back to that earlier effective date when you first made the VA aware that you were making a claim specifically based on a medical condition that you thought was related to herbicide exposure. Now, what we've been finding is, and we talked about this, I believe, on the last show, the National Veterans Legal Services Program, the NVLSP, had identified about 23,000 claims or 5,000 claims or so, where the VA had not applied the Niemer court decision. They assigned the effective date of when the claim was reopened as opposed to applying the earlier effective date for veterans who had filed those claims years ago. And so the VA actually did that when they amended the law and included the Blue Water Navy veterans. When they did the rulemaking process, they did include Niemer and the Niemer court decision in the rules for how they were going to process those claims. Yet some VA regional offices around the nation did not apply that earlier effective date. So my hope here is that the VA understands their requirements under that Niemer decision, and it will be a part of the rules for these new conditions as they're required to under law. And those who did get denials in the past should be assigned that earlier effective date for the award of benefits.
Okay.
You know, the interesting thing with this, Michael, I don't know if you have any thoughts about this, but so those three presumptives that we've just seen, and it will take a period of time to put it in, those three were for Vietnam. and the herbicide exposure. I think it's going to be very interesting looking into the future as we're hearing about the burn pits and some of the issues that affected in Afghanistan and Iraq, if this is going to be carried forward to these other campaigns. But the three that were approved were from the Vietnam Agent Orange era.
I was going to ask that question about what is the what claims do you see or what claims do you anticipate seeing in addition to the burn pits coming from this new generation of veterans from the Iraq, Afghanistan especially? Are there, have they been exposed to other things? Are there, I mean, I know that post-traumatic stress is a very, very big issue with them because of the multiple deployments. But is there anything that you have seen in the claim applications, I guess is the term I'm looking for?
Well, yes. Let's clarify also the addition of these three new conditions are for anyone who was exposed to herbicides. It's not just the Republic of Vietnam, but it also includes the DMZ, excuse me.
That one.
Korea, as well as other places that the government has already acknowledged the herbicides were stored or used, such as the testing sites at Eglin Air Force Base and other places like that. So anybody who was exposed, regardless of where that exposure happened, the predominant place obviously was the Republic of Vietnam. These three new presumptive conditions are for anybody that was exposed to herbicides. My concern about the burn pits is, you know, there is not a comprehensive list that the VA has acknowledged at this point of disabilities related to those burn pits and airborne particulates and other environmental hazards. So I've got a case right now where the veteran died from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was a U.S. Marine. He was involved with the burn pits. Yet when I went and checked the list of conditions related to a burn pit disabilities or being exposed to airborne particulates, not only was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma not listed, there's nothing listed. Which you know, is a little unusual. As General Fasson knows, you know, with herbicides, we've got this comprehensive list of disabilities that are recognized as being related to herbicide exposure. With contaminated water at Camp Lejeune, we've got 8 medical conditions that the VA and the DOD has recognized are related to being exposed and drinking or bathing and cooking with that contaminated water. Same with former POWs. There's a comprehensive list of medical conditions that are related to that. Ionizing radiation or participation in radiation risk activities. There's a list of comprehensive medical conditions related to that particular military exposure and campaign. But with the burn pits, there's not a list. It just, they ask you could get placed on the registry. And of course the VA healthcare system will follow you for any medical conditions that may develop. And I think it's somewhat similar to the former Agent Orange registry, if I'm not mistaken, General Fasson, where it took time for them to actually, and same with the Gulf War illnesses and undiagnosed illnesses. It took them a little time through that registry to identify a cohort, yes, of medical conditions that they were seeing in that group of people. They're like, oh, wow, we've got, you know, of the 70,000 people that we have on the registry, they're all having problems with lung cancer, or they're all having problems with gastrointestinal cancers, or they're all having problems with, brain aneurysms or whatever. So I think, you know, it's good that you bring that up, because if there are listeners out there who were in Afghanistan, Iraq, Djibouti, Somalia, and other places that are recognized for the use of those burn pits, if you have not signed up and are not participating in the registry, please do that, because I think that will help the VA at some point to come up with a comprehensive list of medical conditions that are specifically related to that those activities.
Okay, I'm just concerned. Go ahead.
What I'm concerned about, the reason I brought it up is because, Dale, I believe you were involved. a documentary was done, now it seems like 2 years ago, and it was on the burn pits, and they were already starting through the registry. And you're right on, Michael. You need to keep that going, because nothing's going to happen in a year or 2 years. I mean, look at how long we've been dealing with this Agent Orange and them trying to decide. There's probably 10, 20,000 cases that are going to be involving these three new, hopefully approved presumptives. And so you just got to keep out there. You know, I read a case just, or a story just recently, where the widow husband wrote an article about his wife, who was a nurse, and she served in Afghanistan, and she had cancer, uterine cancer, because of the burn pits. And I mean, she had two little children, and how sad that is. But there are many stories like her out there that, you know, need to be documented. So down the line, it's not going to happen very quickly, but hopefully it could be recognized for their great service.
Right. Yeah. And actually, this is kind of a question I got from a friend of mine that lives out in Jackson, and he had a question about hearing aids. And I don't know if anybody can answer this question or not. He is not part of the veterans health system. And I told him to go sign up and, you know, sign up for health care, even though you don't need it. But at least then maybe you could get a hearing test, and they may find that you were either, you know, yes, you were losing your hearing, but you have a, you know, it's a zero percentage, but that they would then provide you with hearing aids. And I guess that was a question, because he went out on the private market and found out that they were outrageously expensive. And I didn't know if that was, I didn't want to be using the system for that, but wouldn't he be entitled? He was 24 years in the Air Force, was an Air Force nurse in Vietnam on C-130s and all kinds of airplanes and so forth.
Well, once again, I think this is a common disability that we deal with on a daily basis. And I would say, if you believe it's service connected, that's the reason your hearing is going, then you need to submit a claim, you know, through VSOs, county counselors, Legal Help for Veterans, put in a claim, and then go through the system, and hopefully you'll become, you know, granted that. And you're right, Dale, you could get 0% disability, but get service connected. And then if they rule in your favor, yes, you could, you know, through your exam, get hearing aids. So if you believe, you know, it's not just because it's that time aging process.
Right, right. Yeah, I understand that too.
You know, 24 years, a nurse out there, it sounds like there's good criteria that this individual might be eligible for this disability.
Okay. Those of you listening to Veterans Radio right now, if you do have a question, please give us a call. The number in the studio is 734-822-1600. We need to take a real quick break again here in a moment. But the question when we come back is going to be one we've talked about before, and that is survivor's benefits. So be prepared for that question, because I got it in the mail this morning, or I got a text this morning. So you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we will be right back after these messages.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Sergeant First Class Donald Moyer threw himself on a grenade to save the lives of his comrades. Details after this. Moyer's platoon was committed to attack and secure terrain stubbornly defended by a numerically superior North Korean force in well-fortified positions. Advancing up the rocky hill, the leading elements came under intense automatic weapons, small arms, and grenade fire, wounding the platoon leader and platoon sergeant. Moyer rushed to the head of the faltering column, assumed command, and urged the men forward. Inspired by Moyer's unflinching courage, the troops responded, but as they reached the final approaches to the rugged crest of the hill, enemy fire increased in volume and intensity and the fanatical foe showered the platoon with grenades. Undaunted, the group forged ahead, and as they neared the top of the hill, the enemy hurled a grenade into their midst. Moyer, fully aware of the odds against him, unhesitatingly threw himself on the grenade, absorbing the full blast of the explosion with his body. Although mortally wounded, Moyer's act saved several of his comrades from death or serious injury.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org or call 810-767-VETS.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and we have a caller on the line from Utah, Diana. Is from Utah, and she has a question for our benefits experts here. So, Diana, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so glad that you have this capability to interact. Was thrilled to find that this was available when I was listening to the prior program. So, thank you. I wanted to ask the general of the legal department about the program that was just you mentioned about the law that was just passed on herbicides. I have a case helping an advocate for my son who was involved in being contaminated by insecticides in the environment where he worked daily that created poisoning in his system and created disabilities on him. Is that covered as well?
Well, what I would tell you, Diana, and thank you for calling in, is I would suggest that the individual would call us, not today, but offline, call Legal Help for Veterans, call or go to your local veterans service organization or like a county counselor in your area to determine if this young man or woman is eligible for, you know, his disabilities and exposures. You know, it's a process that we're out there to help anybody. So if you want to give us a call, we could get into more detail. But yes, if there was an exposure, he was in Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, and he believes he was exposed and he's going through some disease entities right now, then yes, I mean, what does it hurt to look into it?
Right. And the case is that he was not in Afghanistan or Iraq. He was in the mainland, and he was involved with the caring for fighter pilots and all. And where he was located in his business, they were spraying for rodents and cockroaches and spiders and everything. And daily he had to use this poison around him to keep them away from him in the southern states. And in that, too, he had reactions neurologically that affected him psychologically. And this is getting a little detailed and too much, but they did transfer him up to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in a psychiatric ward and kept him for 6 months without his okay or anything else and performed different activities upon him. He did make a claim against the VA, and it's in appeals or it's into arbitration right now. But my concern is that he's been treated with retaliation and it ignoring his needs since he has applied for this complaint. And I personally have witnessed this, and I just wanted to talk with someone who can help because the internal activities from the VA is highly questionable and very hostile towards him.
I think this is something that that you should call Carol Ann off the air.
Okay.
And Carol Ann, if you want to give your number,
sure.
Do you have it in front of you?
Legal, lovely. Legal just a minute. Let me get a pen. Thank you, Carol Ann. Go ahead.
Hold on. She's getting a pen.
Okay. I've got it. Go ahead.
It's 1-800-693-4800.
Wonderful. And do I ask for you?
You could ask for me. I'm not the attorney. I'm a nurse, but we will discuss it and we will get it to the attorneys within Legal Help for Veterans.
That would be wonderful. So appreciate this opportunity and window to address these needs. And thank you for all you do. And for all the veterans out there, thank you for all your service. God bless you all.
Thank you very much, Diana. Diana from Utah.
Thank you.
It's awesome when we find out that people are really out there listening. One thing that
Dr. Jenny Crispin brought up, and I think Brian brought it up too, and it relates to the shots, it relates to the hearing aid question, is we say this all the time, go and enroll in the VA. It doesn't matter how much money you make, please enroll. I think it's really important as a veteran. You don't know what's going to happen to you down the road, and you need to get your foot in the door. So even if you receive no benefits or anything, you need to enroll in the VA health system.
Well, I think you also, as you just pointed out, you never know when you're going to need it. And most of these VA hospitals across the country are affiliated with some of the finest university healthcare programs also. So, you know, you get the best of care. We're very fortunate here locally, but I know of other VAs that are attached with major university healthcare programs out there. The question that I got was, and as I mentioned before, we have used this. I think we've addressed this before, but the question was from a friend of mine whose husband is a vet with 100% disability. Now, I don't know if it's permanent or not, but she wanted to know what she's supposed to do if her husband passes away. Any suggestions on that? 100% disabled. I'm going to assume that he would pass away based on what he was disabled for. Let's go that way first. So, Michael?
Well, it really is an open-ended question, because survivor benefits are not an automatic, so that's something that people need to really recognize. If the veteran passes away from a service-related disability, regardless of he or she is 100% or 0%, surviving spouses are entitled to dependency indemnity compensation. So again, the rating has absolutely nothing to do with the potential benefit to a survivor. Now, where the 100% rating comes into play is if a veteran is 100% service connected, permanent and total, for a period of 10 years or more, and dies as a result of a disability not related to service, the surviving spouse will be entitled to dependency indemnity compensation anyway. So there's differences in how we think about that. But again, if the veteran is 100% service connected and dies as a result of a disability related to service, and it's less than 10 years at 100%, then yes, the surviving spouse will get dependency indemnity compensation. Along with that will be CHAMP VA, which is the VA's health insurance program, which he or she may already have if the veteran is 100% service connected, permanent and total, because that's the benefit that comes along with that rating. So there will just be a continuation of the CHAMP VA health insurance. They, again, if the veteran was assigned 100% permanent and total disability, that also comes with Chapter 35 Dependents Education and Assistance Program. So they will retain that education benefit, not only for the surviving spouse, but for any eligible dependent children under the age of 26. And then, yes, 100% permanent and totally disabled veterans are also entitled to a military ID card. And if they die as a result of a service-related disability, their surviving spouses will be able to keep that military ID card and have access to commissary and PX privileges, and will also retain some of the certain state benefits that we have in Michigan. And, of course, each state is different. But in Michigan, if the veteran had the property tax exemption based on his or her 100% permanent and total disability rating, the surviving spouse will keep that property tax exemption after his or her death. And so that's about it.
Okay. So I thought that was rather interesting because I'd never heard that if you had less than 100%, and let's say you got a 40% on whatever your issue was and you died from that issue, that your dependent would be entitled to dependent care after that. I mean, dependent
indemnity compensation is the compensation.
Right. Is that based on your percentage or is there a set amount?
It's based on being service connected for the medical condition. If a service connected disability causes your death, regardless of the disability percentage assigned, the survivor will be entitled to dependency indemnity compensation. I'll give an example. I had a surviving, and you know, we have to sometimes go a little bit deeper than some of our regular screening questions. I had a surviving spouse sitting across the desk from me and I said, "Hey, do you know, was your husband receiving any money from the VA?" And she said, "No." And so we go through that as a general screening question. So then I called the VA to report the death of the veteran and to get some additional information. And I'm on the phone with a VA employee, and the VA, I said, "This veteran just passed away. He passed away from a heart attack, myocardial infarction." And the VA employee said, "Mr. Smith, the veteran was service connected for a heart condition at 0%.
Okay.
Which, that's the reason why he wasn't getting any money from
right, him. Yeah. I got one of those.
But he died as a result of his service-related disability because he had a service-connected heart condition.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
And so that surviving spouse received dependency indemnity compensation.
And okay.
But you now, Michael, have to apply for DIC.
Yes.
Just don't get it. So that's another thing that people don't understand sometimes. It's another process that if you know somebody like Michael Smith as a county counselor, a VSO, or coming to us, it just doesn't happen automatically.
Right.
And it's just, it takes somebody to go and say, "Hey, you're 100%. Go out and get the tax abatement." It's like, how after 5 or 10 years, nobody told me about this. That's really sad, but that's why we exist, to go out there and educate people.
What is automatic, Dale, at the 100% permanent and totally disabled rating is, as you said earlier, the VA decided that they were just going to assume that if a veteran passes away and that veteran's 100% permanently and totally disabled, that they will pay the service-connected burial allowance of $2,000, even without evidence that the veteran passed away from some other disability. So those surviving spouses will automatically, if they're the eligible spouse listed on the veteran's record at the time of death, that's one of the other reasons why they need to really like keep their dependency issues up to date. Because unfortunately I had a veteran who did not let the VA know that he divorced his former spouse because he married another person, and he kind of figured, "Oh, well, since
oh no,
and I, you know, I got another spouse, I'll continue to get the spouse rate." Well, his former spouse, because she was listed on his records at the time of his passing, she got the service connected burial allowance and not his current spouse,
who was not happy.
Hey, that's, if you get married or divorced and remarried, make sure you remove the other person from your award and put your new spouse on, so that that eligible dependent spouse receives the benefits that he or she is entitled at the time of your death.
Okay.
Or Michael, the other thing that happens is if you do get a divorce, you don't notify them, you get all this extra money, and then the call comes in that you need to repay all of that money. Holy moly. We had one of those just recently. There's nothing we can do.
There's nothing you can do about it. There is no appeal of that. They're going to get you for an overpayment for having. I had a veteran that did that. The VA finally had him do a dependent status form. He finally let the VA know that he divorced his other spouse and married the other person. But the other person, he married them within a couple weeks of the divorce, the VA still went back and collected the overpayment on the other spouse.
Right.
And because they can only go back 1 year to add the new spouse, he had a debt. He had an overpayment.
Wow. Oh, well, we're coming up to the end of the program here, folks. Again, we've got less than 2 minutes. I want to thank Michael Smith, Washtenaw County Executive for the Veterans Service Office here locally, Carol Ann Falsone with Legal Help for Veterans. Brian Hayes looks like he's still here. And I wanted to make sure that we thank Dr. Ginny Cressman for being on our program. She's the director of the Kettles Veterans Hospital here in Ann Arbor, which is so cool to say. And in our last minute, any final words? Anything that we need to be aware of, what we should be doing?
I think what a great show. It's so helpful to be able to answer questions and get the information out there.
Well, thank you. Obviously, I think that's great. It's always great when we get a phone call, especially from one way out of state. That was even better. Michael?
Well, Washtenaw County Department of Veteran Affairs, although we're working remotely from home, we are open for business. We're filing claims for everything that we normally do. Our financial assistance program is available for any veterans who are experiencing any kind of financial hardships. Records retrievals, as everyone knows right now, is a little bit restricted because of the National Personnel Records Center and the impact of COVID-19 on them. But we still have alternative methods by which we're still retrieving records. But we are very, very busy with the...
We got to go. I'm sorry. I'm getting a countdown. So I got to go. Thanks very much, everybody out there, for listening to Veterans Radio this week. You are dismissed.